What drove you at that stage?
My beliefs. My beliefs.
Beliefs that you could achieve what, though? Was it a belief of a hatred of what had happened to your community? Was it? Well, I'm trying to genuinely get inside your head and give you an opportunity to tell me what was driving you.
But you see, if I can say this again, you know, you talk to me as if you're trying to get inside my head, as if, you know, this is hard to find. I was one of thousands of people who fought against the British during that conflict. And I've said many times, and just let me be very clear, that I'm proud of it.
Was it worth it?
Well, I think we would never have got to where we are today without it, if I'm being honest. And I am glad because, I mean, conflicts, and there are many conflicts in the world, even today, conflicts have really two ways of finishing. And there has to be a way out of it. There has to be a resolution. And one is that there is either absolute victory and defeat, one side over another. And I would say in modern history, that seldom happens. And the other one is that at some point in conflict or in struggle that you go to the negotiating table and you come to the compromises which allow everybody involved in that conflict to agree to a compromise. And in our case, it was the Good Friday Agreement, which is held up in all sorts of places. I mean, I'll be meeting Aung San Suu Kyi from Burma, Myanmar today to talk exactly about this. And to move the whole process forward. So it allowed a situation. And if you want my opinion, if it hadn't have happened, the unionists would have continued on in a one-party state, Catholics and nationalists.
Well, the one-party state was over in 72, wasn't it?
Well, no, it wasn't.
Direct rule came in.
No, it wasn't. Well, direct rule was of no...
There was power sharing in 74.
Well, direct rule was no better. Correctly, it was no better. And if you want to try and get into now, if you want to go through another hour,
I don't.
About arguing over what happened. But you know, we went through a conflict. We ended up in negotiations after the ceasefires in 94, which actually broke down again, and then we get back into negotiations. And I was part of those negotiations. As I said earlier,
yeah.
You know, I was committed to those. Because if you don't have absolute victory and defeat, then you have to defend the way forward with your opponents and enemies.
Here's what I'd rather spend the last few minutes, right, talking about today. You know, there's a. You know, to be fair to you, you always front up on this programme, you always come onto this programme, you always say it as it is from you, fair play. There's got to be some way in Northern Ireland, and I would like your thoughts on this. How do we get to a stage where the people who absolutely despise what your perspective is on what happened in the past are prepared to listen and accept it's your perspective, and that you're prepared to understand, but go beyond understanding, try to do as little as possible to hurt them and acknowledge their hurt?
Well,
and
again,
that's one of the biggest questions I'm currently facing.
Absolutely. And again, if I could say this, it's an interesting question. And I understand you're asking to me, and I'm the Republican, I'm the one who's sitting in front of you. But you see, you have to ask the same question in the same manner.
I would.
I mean, there's a statement out today from the ex-police officers, ex-RUC, who are saying they will not cooperate with the Ombudsman anymore. Right, so this is ex-state forces who feel emboldened enough to make a public statement that they will not cooperate with the Police Ombudsman, which is a statutory body, which is part of the negotiation. So you have to understand that it goes both ways in terms of all of that.
But for you playing your part...
I know, and I understand that as well. I'm one of the representatives in North Belfast. I do talk to other political representatives. I talk to community groups. It may surprise you to know that I talk cross-community as well, because I understand there's an image which sits around me. But the way to do it, and I don't want to oversimplify this, but the first way to do it is through dialogue. And I'm up for dialogue with anybody. I've said this time and time again. Now, there are people who I think are absolutely wrong. There are people who I think have been involved in all sorts of horrendous things. And I'm not saying that from any moral high ground at all. I'm very aware that I was involved in conflict. I'm very aware there was hurt right across the board. And I'm very aware that when I speak, sometimes about volunteers who died or other things that happened, that that can affect other people, that it can hurt other people. And in honesty, because you've asked the question, in honesty, can we ever get a situation where people will not be hurt by what other people say? I'm not sure we can, but can we diminish it? Can we bring it down to a situation where there is an acceptable conversation which can be had, that we can use acceptable language across the board? And I need to say this. Then I do believe, we're in the Haas talks. That's what we want out of the Haas talks. Yeah. We want a truth process which allows, because the one thing that everybody agrees, all victims and survivors right across the board agree, is that they want the truth. So what they want to do with the truth is an entirely different
process. But part of that truth would be who shot that prison officer in the face.
And in fairness, if we have a process which involves everybody, all combatant forces, which involves, remember, the British government, then I have also said publicly, I will be part of that. I will be forced in. There's no problem.
You see, can
trying to isolate it on a programme like yours and saying, well, let Jerry Kelly give all that he did.
I'm not doing that. Theoretically, I'm saying this.
You know, that you try and get it sort of one person, well, you do it and then see if the others follow. That's not the way to do it.
We're nearly done here, but... here we are in a week in Northern Ireland in which you and I are doing this interview together, and it is a week, and I know you heard some of it, in which the victims of the Shankill bombing were expressing their deep, deep, profound pain. Are we not even close to a stage, Jerry, where someone like you might think to yourself that actually unveiling a plaque to someone that planted the bomb, you know, could it be done in a less high profile way? And it's the word that Martin McGuinness used in his tweet, sensitivity.
Who could not be moved by the outpourings of grief 20 years later of the horrendous day that an IRA bomb went off and killed that many innocent people?
So could you tell me, for those people that don't know you, in what way you were moved when you saw those families grieving? What was going through your head when people like me were talking, families were talking about a 7-year-old child and a 13-year-old child?
I'll tell you.
Because I've never heard this from you before. Are you moved by that?
But of course I'm moved.
In what way?
But let me tell you this. And you see, the difficulty in this conversation, and I will answer the question. The difficulty in the conversation is that there is an assumption in the question, and I'm going to answer the question. There is an assumption in the question that, and I have lost family and friends as well, that in some way Republicans don't fail. You know, there's an assumption that I would not have the experience of having lost someone close to me. So to answer your question, Every piece of grief is very personal. So I don't even assume that the grief that I faced, that the heartache of losing people that I faced, I don't even want to compare it. I don't want to sit here. I know that I was a combatant. I don't make an equivalence between combatant and innocent people. So I understand it from this point of view. I have lost. I have seen people killed. So I have felt grief.
And when you watch those families, but I think this is a good opportunity for you. When you watch those families grieving who lost people in the Shankill bomb, tell me what your emotion was.
It's the same. I understand the emotion of losing somebody in horrific circumstances. Now, you also have to realise that in the question that you're, because there's still an assumption, even as you're coming back at me, there is still an assumption that in some way that, you know, Republicans, because I'm just one Republican, that Republicans or nationalists don't feel the same way.
I'm not assuming that. You're putting words in my mouth and in my head.
And you can answer that back, but I'm just saying as it affects me. You see, you need to realise.
I can cut to the chase if you want. Here's cutting to the chase. Should the IRA have never done that day?
Well, It was wrong. There's no question about it. I don't think that the IRA set out to do that, but the IRA and the people involved have, I have to say, and should take responsibility for making that decision.
Can you help me understand how...
But there is no understanding.
But can you help me understand? But I've listened. It's a question I've asked all week.
But I've listened,
I need
no,
to understand this. Someone,
to you, but
how can someone put a bomb in a shop with men and women? How can they do that, Jerry?
Listen to me.
And then say they didn't know they were going to blow children up and innocent people up.
Okay.
How?
Okay. What they did was wrong. Straightforward. There's no other way I can put it.
But did they deliberately want to kill children?
But I'm not here to make excuses. I'm not here to pick through this. And I'll tell you why. Because I would not be the person that people want. I listened to your programs over the last couple of days. So I know that I'm not the person that the families who lost loved ones on that day want to listen to. I mean, that's been straightforward. I'm telling you that I can understand it from the point of view of having lost. But do I understand, if you go through the names of the people to me here, do I understand those relatives, what they're going through? I don't even pretend. I don't even pretend. I don't want to make comparisons. I don't want to be comparable. But if you ask me the general question, and this is the difference between specific and general. If you ask me the general question, you know, have other people suffered in similar ways, then I would have to say yes. But I don't do it. I don't say that to take it away from the suffering of these people, because grief is so individual. You or I will never be able to explain it. We know what we feel.
But you did say a matter of moments ago that you do not draw an equivalence between a combatant
and
a civilian.
Absolutely.
So therefore, can we ever say everyone is a victim of the Troubles, you know, a bomber and someone standing in a city, a child standing in a city centre? Can we say they're both
victims? I speak for myself here. And I am not arguing that they're equal victims. You see, and this is where the mistake in this argument is. But if you're the relative of a combatant who has been killed, or you are the relative of an innocent child who has been killed, you cannot diminish or take away the grief of that relative.
No, I get that.
And that is different.
Okay, I hear that. But in terms of the individuals themselves...
But when people talk about it, and that's the difficulty, okay, which is why I've gone at you a few times on this, Stephen, because the difficulty is it's nearly as if, you know... I am, because I've actually been quoted as making equivalence, which is absolutely and totally erroneous.
And let's nail that now. So you do not think there's an equivalence? You draw a distinction?
If an innocent child not involved in combatant, or adult who's not involved in the combatant forces, of course they're different. There's absolutely no equivocation in my view.
So why does the law define those two categories of person equally?
Well,
the law defines them as both victims.
It does.
It's the DUP trying to change the law.
There is a definition of victim, but what you're saying to me clearly is there's different types of victims, and I'm saying that's fair enough if you're talking about the people who have been killed. But if you're talking about the relatives of those who have lost their lives, then you have to realise, and I have to say this is what over the last, forever, to tell you the truth, in terms of when these issues come up, is what hurts, if you want to talk about hurt, what hurts Republicans and nationalists is that, and when I have often talked about the hierarchy of victims, that's what I'm talking about, because their hurt in some way is diminished, you know, because, you know, you can't be as much hurt because actually your husband, your daughter, your son was killed officially. That doesn't mean anything to somebody who's lost a loved one.
What type of victim, if any, was Thomas Begley?
Well, I'm not going to go any further into this because, you know, I have listened to your programmes over the last few days.
Okay.
And you end up insulting, I don't mean you, I mean, it ends up...
I'm trying to give you an opportunity to explain.
I understand.
Some people from your community will say, I don't give your community an opportunity to say how they feel.
Well,
that's the purpose of that question.
Say,
you were at the plaque unveiling.
That's right.
What type of victim,
Thomas,
if any, was Begley?
Well,
Thomas Begley.
Thomas Begley was a person who was also killed in that day. He was a combatant. And that's the type of victim he is. He is a combatant. He joined as a young man, as I did. He joined the IRA. He was sent out that day to carry out that action, and he did it. Now, I'm not going to go into, because we've already dealt with the intent, I'm not going to what was personally done by Thomas or whatever, but does his family and friends have the right to mourn him? Yes, they do.
Finally, and this is the last question, this is the final question, and thank you for staying so long. The book is called The Escape, The Inside Story of the 1983 Escape from Longkesh Prison. And that is a moment in time, so many years ago. Do you think, and this is the final question, do you think, Jerry, that we are getting any closer to things being better in Northern Ireland? There's been a significant tension. You know, you used the word crisis. I'm not trying to get into that again. Are we going to a better place?
Well,
or are we deteriorating?
Oh, no, I think we're going to a better place. I mean, despite the difficulties, and there are huge difficulties, this, our peace process and political process, the power sharing institutions and all, are things which we talk about throughout the world. So, and sometimes I said, even, you know, other Republican activists you might talk to, saying, look, you nearly need to take it in 5-year chunks, you know, because sometimes you're too close to the trees to realise the huge moves forward that we've made. And I say that collectively. I mean, everybody's made. But nobody said it was going to be easy. I mean, the reason that you have to have an agreement, just bear this in mind, if we all got on okay and if we all knew where we were going, we wouldn't have had to have the agreement. You have an agreement or a contract on the basis that there's mistrust, and upon that structure, you then build trust. And sometimes it's 3 steps forward and 2 steps back, all of that. But are we moving ahead? Yes, we're moving ahead. Are we ever going to go back? No, we're not going to go back. You know, but at times it is frustratingly difficult to move the process forward. And I mean, speaking personally again, or speaking as a Republican, I want the process to move forward. I want to move away from the type of lower level conflict that we're in at the minute, if you can put it that way, or the flags protests, all of that. I hope that we can work a structure out within the Haas talks, which allows us to deal with this huge issue, and it is a huge issue of legacy.
He's not going to be the magic bullet, is
he? No, he isn't. You're right. And he is not going to be the miracle man. But what happened in the Good Friday Agreement, remember, which I said a few moments ago, is that what did it achieve? It wasn't a resolution. What it achieved was a structure upon which you can move forward. It showed a political way forward. It said we can achieve, and this was right across the board, you can achieve what you want to achieve through political means. And I'm absolutely and totally wed to that. And so is Sinn Féin.
Jerry, thank you.